Today we're learning Erchin Yutet. We're starting the fifth parak of Erchin. We're going to again make some comparisons with Nidarim and Erchin, but in the beginning, not exactly yet, but we're going to start with Nidarim. So remember, we have the world of vows versus the world of Erchin, where somebody says the value of someone upon me. Ha'omer mishkali alai. If somebody now says, I want to give my weight. Okay, so again, this is the lashon of a neder, because you don't say the word Erchin. So now you say, I want to give my weight. So, noten mishkalo, he gives the amount, you know, you weigh, how much do you weigh, and then you give that amount in some material. So, im kesef, kesef, vim zahav, zahav. If you said in silver, then in silver. If you said in gold, then in gold. Later the Gemara is going to say, that's obvious. If you said in silver, then silver, said in gold, gold. What if you didn't say anything and the Mishnah doesn't really tell us? So, we'll get back to that later when the Gemara kicks in. Ma'aseh bi'imashal Yermakia. There was a case that happened with the mother of Yermakia, which we're going to see, was a very wealthy woman. Sha'amra mishkal biti alai. She said, I'm giving the weight of my daughter to the Beit HaMikdash. In the Tosefta, there's a different version of the story, and it actually says that Yermakia was sick. And while Yermakia was sick, the mother said, if she gets better, I will give her value to the Beit HaMikdash, which gives a little bit of a context as to why someone would actually say this, right? So, what happened? Al tali Yerushalayim. So she went up to Yerushalayim v'shakla mishkela zahav, and she gave the girl's weight in gold. Okay, so we're gonna have to see why she gave it specifically in gold. Notice she didn't say gold anywhere in her words. We'll see. Mishkal yadi alai. What if you say I'm giving the weight of my hand upon me? So Rashi points out that there's a bit of a problem with how he explains. I mean, it's obvious from the Mishnah that that's the struggle. But Rashi explains why. You can't really weigh your arm. Why? Right? Rashi says, you know, you could either make it lighter or heavier depending on how much weight you put on it. Right? You try to put your arm on a scale, it's not going to weigh as much as your arm actually weighs. And depending on, you can put pressure on and then it'll be heavier. And you cannot and it'll be lighter. So you can't actually figure out how much it weighs. So Rabbi Yehuda is going to give the following suggestion, creative science experiment. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mimalei chavit mayim, you fill up a barrel full of water, umachnisa ad marpeko, and you put your arm in up until your elbow. Vishok, okay, so then what's going to happen? Now the water is going to start coming out. Okay? So now you're going to take your arm out and you're going to end up with empty space in this, right? It's no longer up to the top. So what do you do then? Shokel mi basar chamor. Okay, Rashi says, Mishkal basar chamor ki mishkal adam. We're going to see this later in the Gemara also. The assumption is that the weight of a piece of meat of a donkey is the most similar to the weight of a human being. And therefore, you're going to weigh a piece of meat of a chamor, va'atzamot v'gidim, with the bones and the sinews. V'notein l'tocha ad sh'titmaleh. And then you keep, you know, you put the meat in a little bit more until you get back to that same water level. So now this is, you end up with a piece of a size of donkey that's the exact same volume as your arm. Okay, now notice it's volume, not weight, but the assumption is that the weight is the most similar. Okay, and then you're going to basically have to take that amount, that's your weight basically. Okay. This is not an exact measurement at all, because even if you assume it's about the same, you don't know what percentage of bone to sinews to meat, right? We don't know the ratio, and this piece that you took isn't necessarily the same as what's in your arm. So what does he say? Ela shamin et hayad kama hi ru'uya lishkol. So we estimate the hand. How much, and as we just kind of do a rough estimate about your hand, how much it's, you know, it can weigh. My im kesef kesef. So the Gemara starts off and says, what's this line in kesef kesef im zahav zahav? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda explains exactly as I did before. Peresh kesef kesef, peresh zahav zahav. Right? If you specified kesef, then it's silver. If you specify gold, then it's gold. So now the Gemara says, pshita, isn't that obvious? So they say, no hakamash malan. That was all to say the reason is because you specified. Halo peresh, but if you didn't specify, patar nafshe becholdihu, then you would exempt yourself with anything. You could basically take any material and that would be fine. Ki Rechava, just like Rechava says, to Amar Rechava, ba'atra detakle kufra, patar nafshe afilu bekufra. Rechava says that in a place where they weigh tar, then you could basically pay your way with a measurement of tar, which is obviously a much less expensive material. So the Gemara says, Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? So now they say, Lo tzricha de'ika de'taka v'ita de'chayo. There's some people who sell it by weight, and there's some people who sell it by volume. So if there's something that's sold sometimes by weight, sometimes by volume, maybe you would think, Ma'u de'tema, you might think, Kevan de'kulu lo takle lo. Since not everybody sells this by weight, then maybe when you say mishkali alai, that doesn't work. Okay, so you'd have to have it. You might have thought you'd have to have it where it's an item that's only sold by weight. Kamashmalan, that it could be something that's sometimes sold by weight. So basically, if you don't specify anything, you just say mishkali alai, you could take any sort of material that is sometimes sold in weight. So now they say, I'm a Rav Papa. Rav Papa gives another example. Ba'atra detakle shamche, in a place where they weigh onions, you can even pay your weight in onions to the Beit HaMikdash, okay? Take a weight of onions, that weight, and that's fine. So the Gemara again says, Pshita, well, if we said it's things that are sold by weight, well, isn't this obvious? What are you trying to tell us? Lo tzricha debatar deshakle shadu tre tilta. What we mean, sometimes what they do is after they weigh the onions, okay? I think this happens less so in Israel, but it happens, I know, certainly in Shvakim around the world, where, you know, they'll throw in an extra few. Right, you've already weighed it, and then they'll just kind of, you go to a shuk, right? They'll just throw in an extra two or three. So since they throw in a little bit more, you might say that's not then sold by weight because they've added to it. So kamashma, and again, it's coming to teach you that you could even do that. Masedi mashal yirmakya. So now we have this case. We said a minute ago that the pshat of the Mishnah is, even though it doesn't say so, that if you don't specify, you could bring it with any material. So why did the mother of Yirmakya pay in gold? Right? It sounds like Maaseh Listor. That sometimes when the Mishnah brings a case, usually the case, they bring us a real live case that happened, they bring it to prove their point. But in this case, it sounds like they're bringing it to contradict because it's saying she had to bring it in gold. Right? So now they say, Chisur Machasra B'Hachi Katani. Really, there's some words missing, and this is what it should say. V'im Adam Chashuvu. But if it's an important person, like she was obviously a wealthy woman, af al gav de lo parish, even if you don't specify, lichvichvodo amrinan, they have to give it according to their, you know, their stature in society. So since she was a very wealthy woman, her simple statement is taken as she obviously meant in gold, and she had to give it in gold. Umasebim, and then therefore the Mishnah then continues to give us the case. Umasebim, mashal yirmakya, shamra mishkal biti alai, va'alta liyushalayim ushaklua, v'natna mishkala zahav. Okay, and there's your case to prove it. Now we're going to get into some other cases. Amar Rav Yehuda, ha'omer komati alai, noten sharvit she'eino nichpaf. If you say, so now this is, we're getting off of the mishkal, we're getting into, well, since we talked about weight, what if someone says, I'm giving my height? So now, do you mean, so the assumption is you mean, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you mean I'm giving a big, long, straight stick that can't bend, okay? Because I'm talking about my koma, which is something long and tall. Melo koma tialai, but if I say I'm giving the length of my height, then already no tain sharvita nechapaf. You can give something that bends, because then you're just saying I'm giving the length of it, but it doesn't matter. I don't mean it has to be tall and straight without bending. Okay?
What?
Yeah.
What's the value of a sharvit? How are they comparing your height to a stick?
Because what it means is the length of my height, and something that looks like my height.
But then the stick is so meaningless and so worthless. So why can't they just say lo amar klum? A couple of these things, yadi or komati.
Well, stick could be used for something.
How thick is the stick?
The mikdash. Right, well then, so then they're going to talk about thickness. So first of all, the assumption is when you say komati, Rashi says, if you say komati, it has to be that it can't bend. So Rashi says it has to be thick, so that it can't bend. Whereas below komati already doesn't have to be, it could be thinner because it can bend. So that also affects, you know, how valuable it is. I agree. It doesn't sound like it's worth so much of anything, but it's something.
So, but they do in certain situations say lo amar velo klum.
Right, but here since you could say mishkali alai, you mean something. Komati should also mean something. So nobody thinks it doesn't mean anything. The question is just what exactly does he mean? So now the Gemara says, "Meiti." Wait a minute. If you're going to distinguish between komati and malo komati, Rav Yehuda, we're going to bring you a source that contradicts explicitly what you said. It says in a Tana Edik source, "Komati alai, malo komati alai, noten shaviche no nichpaf." Either which way, you have to give something that can't be bent, because doesn't. This is again how much you distinguish between some komati, malo komati. It all means the same thing. It means my height. So my height means something high and tall and doesn't bend. So now they say, so how do they explain this? Hu de'amar ki Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva against Tanakama and or Chachamim, and the Braita goes like Chachamim, and Rabbi Yehuda's statement goes like Rabbi Akiva. Now, what's Rabbi Akiva's whole thing? Didiek lishnei yetera. Rabbi Akiva holds, and this is all about words and using of words, use of words. If you add something that's not necessary, like milo komati, since you could have said komati. So Chachamim say there's no difference. It all means the same thing. It's just different ways of expressing things. We all know that people express things in all different ways. You could say one thing, you could say, you know, we all mean the same thing often with all of our words. But if you, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you add a word that's not necessary, you must have meant it specifically for some reason. So if you just meant komati alai, and you meant a tall stick that doesn't bend, you would have just said komati alai. The fact that you added milo must mean that you mean it could bend. Where do we know that Rabbi Akiva says this? Because it sounds very nice, but where do we know he says this? So it actually comes up in a Mishnah Baba Batra. Ditnan, okay, you're missing really the beginning part, which is someone who sells a house. Okay, I say, I'm selling you my house, and in my yard, I have a bore or a dut, okay, which is a pit or a cistern. A cistern is a pit that has stones inside to kind of make sure the water doesn't go into the dirt nearby. Ditnan, lo etabor velo etadut. Okay, when I sell you my house, it doesn't include a bore or a dut that's in my field. Why is this? Because when I sell you my house, I'm selling you a place to live, and those are not for living purposes. Okay, so I didn't intend to sell it, even though I didn't say anything. I didn't say I'm not selling them to you. Af al pi, and even if I said shekatav omka viruma in the shtar, in the deed, I didn't write. I wrote. And I'm giving you my house to the depths and up to the sky, basically. What I meant in that was not a bore or a dute, something underground. What I meant is, if you want to dig under the house, the rights to the underneath part of the house or the airspace above the roof. Okay, like let's say, this would be funny. Let's say I sold you my house and then I decide, what I'm basically saying is, I was thinking about it like with the Uriah, you know, you have building rights. Mm-hmm. How high you can build your house. What you're basically saying is, I'm selling you the rights to build higher if you want. In other words, and that I won't come and claim that airspace is mine. Okay. Could you imagine? You sold your house and somebody comes and says, well, I'm going to build a third floor above your house. You know, I'm going to build an attic. I sold you my house. I didn't sell you the airspace above, right? So that's what he means. He doesn't mean a bore or a cistern. Or the guy theoretically could dig under the house and do something under that, right? Let's say a basement, right? Yeah. I'm going to dig out a basement and live there, right? So that's what he means when he means I'm kavruchba. He doesn't mean the bore and the dut. But comes Rabbi Akiva and he adds, but since I didn't specify anything about the bore of a dut, it's true I get to keep it, but what don't I get to have? Sarich likach lo derech, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, but I didn't keep for myself a path to get there. So therefore, if I want access to that cistern or pit, I have to actually purchase a little rights to walk through your property to get to. Okay? Chachamim amrei meino tzarich. You don't need to purchase a path to get there. No, not at all. It's obvious that if I'm not including the boar and the dude, even though I don't say anything, it's obvious that's not included and a path to them is not included and I get to keep that without, you know, I have my own path. Obviously, I didn't mean to sell you that. But here comes the important line. Moder Rabbi Akiva, but he agrees with Chachamim, bizman sha'amarlo. But if he adds the words, here we go, he added words that didn't need to be said, chutz me'elu, so I'm selling you my house other than the bor v'dut, then why did he say those words, right? She'ein tzarich likach lo derech. The point is, why did he add those words? Specifically to say, I'm keeping myself a path to get there. Alma kevan delo tzarich, v'ka'amar, since he didn't need to say those words, and yet he said them, litfuye miltakate. What was his point? To add something, okay? So hachanami, likewise, in our case, kevan de lo tzarich, since he didn't need to say the word milo, and he added it, litfuye miltakate. He must have been coming to add something, and that's that he could get the stick that could be bent. Ibayalahu. Now the Gemara is going to ask a series of questions. Rashi explains them one way, Tosfot explains them another way. I'm going to explain according to Rashi, but you can look at Tosfot if you want. Tosfot understands these questions a little differently. Omdi mahu. If you say my standing mahu, does that mean a sharvit? Is it the same thing as komato? Okay, or do we view this as somewhat different because he says omdi, right? We might, 1 second, according to this. So it could be he's actually referring to that, right? My standing isn't actually a measurement. My height is a measurement, but my standing isn't actually a measurement. So maybe, like you suggested before, Naomi, maybe this means nothing. Maybe it doesn't really mean anything when he says this. Ruchbo mahu. What if I say my width? Now, do I mean I have to give a stick with the same width as my width? Or do I mean, let's say, measure the width of my body and take a stick that's as long as the width of my body, okay? But not necessarily as wide as the width of my body. Yeshivato mahu. What if I say the way I sit? Now, there's a bunch of interpretations. Does it mean, well, the height of the way I am when I'm sitting? Does it mean the space I take up while I'm sitting, you know, and there's different ways to measure yeshivato. What do I mean? Ovyo mahu, my thickness. Okay, what's that? Hekefo mahu, what about the circumference of my body? Would you need then to have something that's bent that could, you know, like a tape, what do you call it? Not a tape measure, what a seamstress uses, It's a tape measure? Okay, I always think of it, right. It's a flexible tape measure, you know, something that can be bent. So, is it that? Mahu, again, what all these questions are, this is a bit of a debate. According to Tosfot, each question builds on the next. If you want to say this is that, then that one, what about that? And if you want to say that, what about the next? Okay, there's different ways of understanding. In any case, the Gemara says, Teku, we don't really know what you meant. Okay. Mishkal Yadi Alai. So now we're going to go back and understand a little bit better the machloket. We're going to see a little more in depth the machloket Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yossi from a Braita. Tanu Rabbanan, it's very often where the Mishnah gives it in one way, and then in Braita there's a bit of a more expanded version. Mishkal Yadi U Mishkal Ragli Alai. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mevi Chavit U Memale Mayim U Machnis Bayad Ad Atzia. Like we said, right, you put your arm in up to the elbow, Uberegel Ad Arkuvan, and your leg up to your knee. Vishokel basar chamor v'gidim v'atzamon, and then you weigh a piece of meat from a donkey with all of its sinews and bones. Vinotein l'tochach titmale, and you put it inside until it fills up. Va'af al pishein raya l'davar, even though there's no proof for this on the pasuk, zecher l'davar, there's an allusion to it. Shneamar, I'll read you the whole pasuk. It's in Yechezkel kaf gimel kaf. Vateagna al pilag shehen asher basar chamurim basaram bezirmat susim zirmatam. Okay, they're comparing between humans and the basar, right? Their meat is like the meat of a chamor, and their zrima is like the susim and whatever. But the point is, it's not really the pshat there, but there's some comparison between humans and chamorim. So therefore, right, it's obviously a derogatory term. They're talking about them and their pilagshim, and obviously in a negative context. But anyway, there's some remez to the fact that this is the case from this pasuk. It doesn't obviously mean that. So that's what he says. Amar le Rabbi Yossi, heyach afshar l'chavein, basar k'nega basar, gidim k'nega gidim, atzamo k'nega atzamo. You can't really measure this exactly. It's almost like he's saying, you're trying to do a science experiment, but it's a very uncontrolled science experiment. It's not a very successful one. So Amar le Rabbi Yehuda, omdin, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, we estimate, you know, we kind of figure it out. Amar le Rabbi Yossi, ad shomdim, yamodu et hayad. Well, if already you're going to go to the world of estimating, why don't we just estimate what we think his arm measures? In other words, this is silly. Like, if you want to be exact, then you can be exact. But you're not going to be exact anyway, so you may as well just estimate it, right? It's interesting in terms of, you know, tfisot. So let's just see his reaction, and then maybe we'll go into it for a second. Rabbi Yehuda, kama de'efshar avdinan. Rabbi Yehuda says, we try our best. In other words, my way of estimating is better than yours just saying, okay, let's look at his arm and let's just see, well, how much do you think this weighs? Or let's put it on a scale, and even though it might be a little heavier or lighter, depending on how you hold down the scale, at least we can come up to some estimation. And Rabbi Yehuda says, I'd rather do as best as, get as close as I possibly can. I assume they're also being very careful, because again, this goes into the whole world of hekdesh. And someone says, I'm giving something to the Beit HaMikdash. We don't want anybody, and that's when it's between people. So, okay, if I pay you a little more, a little less, but here we're talking about God, you know, and you owe this to the Beit HaMikdash, we don't want to play games with this. You know, maybe you'll end up owing something to the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, you know, they try to get it as close as possible. So it's an interesting idea about, you know, do we try to go as far as we can, or this is a crazy, ridiculous method, according to Rabbi Yossi, and just estimate, you know, and do as best as you can. Bayad ad hatzil. So now your arm, we're talking about from, right, starting from your hand up until your elbow. So now we're going to talk about that and until your knee, and we're going to compare it to other cases in the Torah. Uriminhu, doesn't this contradict the following source? Kiddush yadayim v'raglayim, when we say you're supposed to wash your hands and feet, b'mikdash, in the Beit HaMikdash, there was this, Kohanim had to wash their hands and feet, ad haperek, just goes up to your wrist. So why all of a sudden here are we going up to your elbow? So what do they say? De'oraita ad haperek, when we say hand in the Torah, we mean just until the wrist. But b'nidarim, it's a different world. Why? Halach achar l'shon b'nei adam. We go by what people say usually. And when people say your arm, what do they generally mean? Or your hand, right? It's unclear whether yad means, it's even hard to translate this. Yad could be kafayad, right? Your hand. Or yad could be your whole arm. You know, first of all, they don't even talk about it until the shoulder, although we'll get there in a minute. So right now, what they're going to say is, when people say yad, what they mean is until the elbow. So therefore, nidarim go by what people generally talk about, and d'oraita, we say it's really just the hand. So now the Gemara is going to question this d'oraita ad haperek. D'oraita, really, until just your wrist? V'hagabe tefillin, d'chtiv yadecha. Now, where do we put your tefillin? We put them the top of your arm. So what do you mean? Tefillin go al yadecha. And yadecha, okay, we're going to see. D'chtiv yadecha, v'tana d'be menashe, yadecha zo kiborit. That is your biceps. So how can you say that d'oraita, it's to your wrist, when d'oraita yadcha means your biceps? So what do they answer? Really, d'oraita kiborit kula. When we say d'oraita, we really mean biceps. So yad in the Torah means your entire arm. B'nidarim, when it comes to neder, halach achar l'shon b'nei adam, which is just until your elbow. Now, what about kiddush yadayim v'raglayim? Why b'mikdash? Why is that only to your wrist? Hilchata gemira la. That's a halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. We have an old tradition that that's what they washed. Okay, you can imagine it would be a little difficult if they were washing all the way up to their shoulders in the Beit HaMikdash, right? You could see it was a little more complicated. Anyway, we have a Masoret, and that's the exception to the rule. Now we're going to do the exact same thing with the leg. Baregel, because regel could mean foot, it could mean leg. So, right, in modern Hebrew, we say kaf haregel or kaf hayad. But in those days, it's clear they weren't necessarily using that term. Baregel ad arkuva uraminu. Raglaim prat regalim prat lebale kabin. There's three regalim. That means, right, three times a year we have to go up. Notice the word regalim comes from regal. Why regal? Because people would walk to the Beit HaMikdash. So now they say if you have a fake foot or you're missing the kaf regal, your foot, then you're patur. So what do you see here? Regal is just the foot. Because even if you have the bottom part of your leg, without the foot, you're going to be patur from shalosh regalim. So why are we saying now regal in this case goes up to the knee? So again, they're going to answer like they did before. But nidarim halach achar l'shon b'nei adam, and people call regal, right, from the knee. Udaoraita prat lebale kabin, the exact same structure as before. They're going to say, but really, daoraita, it's the foot. V'hagabe chalitza dichtiv raglo. Okay, the real pasuk is, right, so let me read it. When a woman does chalitza, she's supposed to marry the brother, and the brother doesn't want to marry her. So they go through it first. Let me go through all the details. Her husband dies without children, and she's supposed to marry the brother, but the brother doesn't want to. So what happens? Nigsha yevim toe lav leinaz kinim v'chaltzana alo me'al raglo. She takes off his shoe from his foot. Me'al raglo. Okay, so now we're going to learn. Let's say he didn't have a foot, okay? Vitana chaltza min arkuva ulamata chalitza taksheira. As long as she undid his shoe from under, from below his knee, that will work. So what do you see here? Midoraita, it's from the knee. That seems to work. Chalitza tak shera. So what do they answer? Shanehatam damakra me'al raglo. But you didn't pay attention. It said from above the regel. Therefore, the regel is the foot, and she can do it from above the regel. So now they say, wait a minute. If you say yihachi lamala merakuvan ami, then why did they put the cutoff at the knee? If they say, as long as it's above the leg could be above the foot, could be anywhere above the foot, which could even include the top part of the leg, the thigh. So what do they answer? No, that's me'al velo me'al de me'al. In other words, above the foot is the part right above the foot, but already if we're going to get above the knee, that's already above, right? That's already above the upper part, the part that was above already. So that's too far. So Amar Papa, Rav Papa says, based on this, Shema Mina, one can infer, Hai is devira, the ankle, ad aranachit, really is considered as if it's on the floor and basically as one part with the foot. In other words, you might say there's the foot and then there's the ankle above that. If you call the ankle above the foot and not part of the foot, then what are you going to say? That the ankle is me'al and the bottom part, you know, where the lower part of your leg is going to be me'al de me'al. So therefore, he says it must be that that's al aranachid is considered one part. Because if you view that as a separate part of the foot, havale istavira me'al v'shaka me'al de me'al, right? Your istavira, your ankle will be considered me'al raglo, and then the part between the knee and the ankle is going to be me'al de me'al, and you won't be allowed to do chalitza. And it said clearly there you could do chalitza up to the knee. Ravashi amar filu tema mifsik pasik. Ravashi has a different explanation. He says, even if you say it's considered a separate part, called bahade kara kikara dami. Anything that's right alongside the foot is considered the foot. Even though you say it's a separate part, it's still a part that's kind of together with it, in which case above that would still be just considered me'al raglo. Okay, it's a very tedious Gemara trying to get into, right? What do we mean? It's tedious. On the other hand, it's very important to specify. When you say regel, you say yad, what exactly do you mean? You could see why this would be critical, because it's confusing, right? Since those terms can refer to different parts. Dimei yadi alai. What if you say I'm giving the value of my hand? Shaminoto kamahu shave biyad, ubelo yad. We evaluate how much is he worth with a hand and how much is he worth without a hand. It's tricky. We're going to see. Even the Gemara is going to talk about some trickiness about it. Zech homer b'nedarim mibe'erchin. And here I said we were going to compare nedarim and erchin. This is the difference between neder and erchin. Why? Neder, you say yadi, you have to give a value of what you're like, what it's like to be without a hand. In other words, how you're going to be valued with a hand, how you're going to be valued without a hand. But when you say erchin, if you remember, erchin, we talked about this in the very beginning of the Masechet, is only about value of a person. So a hand does not count as the value of a person. Remember we said roshi, yes, because roshi, the life is dependent upon it. So it's as if you said my whole body. But yad, you can live without a hand. It's not pleasant, but you can live without a hand. So now, obviously, how do we evaluate what you're worth with a hand, what you're worth without a hand? Amarava, omdino to omed shal nezikin. Ah, he says, go look at nezikin. What do we do in nezikin? If somebody breaks someone's arm, so what do? We go to the shuk, we figure out, we say, okay, well, what would they take the person without his hand? And now they say, or with the broken arm, they say, how much could you sell in the shuk right now? And then they evaluate, how much were you personally worth in the shuk before that? How strong you were, you know. They try to figure out, now this is going to be a bit of a problem, we'll see soon, but they try to figure out what were you worth before and what are you worth now that you can't do it? Now, the whole evaluation is happening after he has no hand anymore. So they try to estimate what could you have sold for in the shuk when you still had a hand. And that difference is the value of a hand. Okay? Samar le'abaye midame. Those two things are not comparable. Hatam gavra zilahu, hacha gavra shviyahu. Now, in the case of our case, let's say I go and I say I'm giving the value of my hand. So if I go now and they try to evaluate what am I worth on the slave market right now and what would I be worth if I didn't have a hand, right now I'm standing before them as what they call a gavra shviyach. I'm a person worth valuable right now because I actually do have both hands, and it's just a matter of imagining if I didn't have a hand, what would I be worth? But when the person who no longer has a hand comes to get evaluated, he's already a gavra zila. He's already looking like a nebuch, so to speak. Which means that when they go to evaluate him, what are they going to do? they're going to look at him. This is so fascinating. It's about how people perceive people. They're going to look at him with a different eye. They can't really imagine him. Like, this is like the inability of the human mind to fathom what he was really like before he lost his hand. So therefore, they're not going to evaluate him at a high value. So the difference between with a yad and without a yad when it comes to nizikin will be a smaller number. Whereas when they're looking at him as a healthy person, it would be a different number. So they're basically saying you can't use this comparison. That's Rashi's interpretation. Tosfot actually thinks the opposite, okay? He has a different interpretation. He doesn't understand it that way. He says, let me just look at the end of Tosfot. Nira Luri, okay? It's in Tosfot Hatam Gavra Zilahu. Okay, and then right before the lines get wide, Dahachi Peresh, Amar lo Abaye Midami, Hatam Gavra Zilahu, Gabei Nizikin, Sharei Kishenikta'a Yado, Hu Nim'as Yoter Mishayalo Yad. To be the opposite. He's going to say, oh my God, this person's worth nothing. They're going to see him without a hand and say, wow, what a huge decrease in value. It's going to be the opposite. They're going to say, if he was healthy, he'd be worth a ton. And now, look, without a hand, he's worth nothing, which means they're going to get a much larger amount. But when somebody goes and they have both hands intact and they just kind of estimate, well, what would you be worth without a hand? They're not going to actually lower the value as much, in which case you're going to end up with a smaller number. So it's interesting that Rashi and Tosfot take two opposite approaches. It all goes into what's the person thinking when he evaluates, and how it shows that evaluations are never, it goes back to what we saw earlier. How to evaluate, you can never be exact about things. Maybe it's trying to tell you that you shouldn't make these statements like Erki Alai, Omdi Alai, all these things that aren't so clear what you mean. So that's Abaye's question. So what does Abaye say? Amar Abaye. Omdin, so how do we evaluate it then if that's not a good system? We don't use the Nizikin analogy. What we do is, Kama Adam rotze litein be'eved ha'osem alachau b'yado echat, lo'ose b'shte yadav. We evaluate, what if you say, you go to the shuk and you say, listen, I can only use one hand. How much would someone buy you for? Versus if you say, I have two hands and I can work, you know, with both hands. So what would you sell for on the shuk? Like that, okay? And then it's not the same thing as Nizikin, it's its own unique estimate. So now they say, Yado Achad Mai. What does it mean, Yado Achad? Mai Niyu. V'idach. Right, Mai Niyu. How do you read this one? Second. V'idach Psika Hainu Hach. I'm trying to figure out how to read those words. Mai Niyu. But basically what it means is that, one second, okay, so it reads like this. Yado achad mainihu. So what does it mean, yado achad? Because then they're going to say, v'idach psika. It's as if you're saying you have one hand that's intact and one hand that's cut off, right? You go to the shuk and you see, what would it be if I had my hand cut off? Well, then, that's exactly what we said before, right? Hainu hach. That's if you view with one hand cut off, well, that's exactly the same as the nizikin. So you haven't told us anything different about it. So what does he answer? Ela yado muchtevet lirabo rishon. This is a fascinating case. It reminds us of the chatzi. Remember the eved who's half free and half slave? How could that be? Because one master, he's owned by two masters and one freed him and one didn't. So it's like every day, you know, we look at, he's like half working and half, right? Either we say maybe like one day he worked for one and one day he worked for the other. So this is the case where the guy says, listen, I can work for you with this hand, but my other hand is owned by a different master, okay? It's not that it's cut off. So again, it doesn't have that visual image of, you know, someone who's got some bad problem. But, you know, it's as if I can't use my hand, okay? But, yeah, very interesting. By Rava, so now we get into a whole slew of questions. Amduhu omid shel nizikin. What if, so, okay. Rabbi says it's not the omid of nizikin, but he says, now we're going to talk about something else, okay? Rava says, Rava first of all said you could do Omed of Nizikin, right? But now the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says that when it comes to Erchin for Nizikin, we use three people to evaluate how much you're worth. But when it comes to Hekdesh, we need 10, okay? You need 10 people, you need 9 judges and a Kohen, okay? And a priest. So when it comes to let's say Omdu Omid Shel Nezikin, they already evaluated this person, what he was worth in the Nezik world, with a hand, without a hand. And then he said, Amar Deme Alai, and then he said, the Damim of my hand, Alai, or my worth, even just my whole worth, okay? They already evaluated what he is, but now he says, and now I want to do, you know, I'm going to take my worth and give it to to the Beit HaMikdash, Mahu. Now we're going to get into a whole thing about Omid. The fact that there's this special law that you need 10 people to do it, does that mean that you need a special evaluation just for Hekdesh? Mm-hmm. Or does it mean that that's ideal, but if you already have an evaluation of what you are, then that's fine. Okay? So, mi amar ha'amdu chadazimna. We already have what this person's valued. O dilma shane umdina debe asara ma'umdina. Or is it different because you need these 10 people to do it? Okay? So, debate me umdina debate slata, right? An umdina of 10 people is different from an umdina of 3. And now we're going to go on. We're going to have a whole slew of questions based on this. Im tim tzilomer shane umdina debe asara me umdina debate slata. Let's assume there is a difference. And if you already evaluated this person for Nezikin, you have to reevaluate him when it comes to omed for hektesh. But what if amar dami alai va'amduhu? Bechazar va'amar dami alai mahu. Now, what if he says dami alai? And then they evaluate him. And then he says it again, dami alai, meaning he wants to give him his value twice. Do you need to do a new one? What's the issue? Hacha vadayam du be'asara. Do we say he's already been evaluated by 10? We can use that, right? I think about ivchunim the kids get, you know, do they expire at a certain point? You have to redo them every few years. So, do you say, you know, I'm du be'asara, and we have a good evaluation? O dilma shavach beni beni, but maybe his value changed in between then and now. Okay. Amar damai alai. So now that leads us to the next question. What if you said, so let's say, you could say, no, already I'm du be'asara, it's okay. Or, no, sorry, let's say you're worried about the Shevach Beini Beini. So what if he says, Dami Alai, V'lo Amduhu, but they didn't yet evaluate him. V'chazar V'amar Dami Alai. So he says it twice within some time span, but he hadn't yet gotten evaluated. So what we say, Ha Chavadai B'chad Zimnam Dinan. At this point, we can obviously evaluate him at one moment. O Dilma, Kevan De'Bezeh Charzeh Nadar, Trey Zimnei Amdinan Lehu. Or do we say that since he said it at different times, each one needs its own evaluation? Then we're saying the din of evaluation is a unique halacha that has to go with every time you said something. So, okay, if you're going to say, like in the last case, that even though since you did it at two separate occasions, you need two separate evaluations, even though they're going to come out exactly the same because now you're at a later stage. You know, you can only be evaluated one value at this point. But imtim tzalomer kevan debazar chazer nadar trei zimne amdin alehu. What if, right, we'd still have to do it twice. What if you say, can you imagine? Shnei deme alai. You said, I'm giving two of myself. Okay, now, you said it all bevat achat at one moment. So mau. Ha chavadai bevat achat nadar, and therefore bevat achat amdin alai. Do we say, okay, well, you said it all in one statement, so therefore evaluation is one statement. O dilma kevan de ka'amar shnei, since you said two deme alai, kizeh charzeh dami. It's as if you said them on two separate occasions, and you actually need two separate evaluations. This is all trying to get to the importance of the evaluation. How much significance do we give this actual act of evaluation? Okay, you know, so we talk about the value is important in evaluating what the value is, especially in light of the fact that we said this is all just estimation. Maybe it has to be done in a very, you know, particular way, and we need a number of them, you know, sometimes. Im timtzalomar, kevan de ka'amar shnei, kizeh charzeh dami. So we understand, okay, if you're going to say, again, we don't really know what we say because there's no answer, but if you're going to say, once he said two, it's as if they're one after the other and you have to do two. What if amduhu me'elav mahu? What if he got evaluated? Now, goes back to get. A get has to be written lishma, right, for the intent for that person specifically. So now they're saying maybe the evaluation has to be done for the intent of this specific mitzvah. Let's say you said demi alai, and then someone just decided to give you an evaluation of who you are. I don't know why, for for no good reason, but you now have an evaluation. Can you take this evaluation of your worth and say, oh, I'm using this for the Hekdesh? So I'm doing me'elav ma'hu. Mi amrinan ha'ami me'elav v'kai. He's already been evaluated, so we can use that. O dilma be'inan kavana le'umdina. Or do you need intent for the evaluation? So after all these questions, the Gemara is going to say, Pashut miyachada. At least one of these we can answer. Unfortunately, the Gemara is going to reject this proof. Ditnan, it says in the Mishnah, Dami alai, umet. If you say dami alai and then you die, lo yitnu yorshim. The yorshim don't have to give anything. She'ein damim lemetim, because there's no way to evaluate a dead person. They're not worth anything. And if you say that a person who is evaluated in some other way, right, for without the right intent, counts as an evaluation, ha'amid b'kai. This guy is as if he was evaluated. What do they mean, basically? Rashi says that ein lacha adam she'eino shaveh arba azuzim. The least worth of a the minimum worth of a person is at least 4 zuzim. So you could view that as if he had some sort of evaluation in his lifetime, because everyone, right, if you don't need a particular evaluation that was done l'shem mitzvah, then you would say this person, l'fachot, is worth 4 zuzim, because there's, it's almost like we say chazaka, there's a chazaka, and we can use that in court, that like everybody does the following. So you could say everybody's worth at least 4 zuzim, so they should at least have to pay 4 zuzim. So therefore, what do you see here? Right, miika gavra. Oh, sorry. The Gemara says it explicitly. Sorry, I didn't read on. Ha'ami b'kai miika gavra delo shave arba azuzim. Right, is there a person who's not worth at least 4 zuzim? So, what do they answer? Amduhu me'elav. So therefore they say amduhu me'elav nachid. It's as if he hadn't amduhu me'elav. So, what do they say? Le'umdina. No, sorry. Amduhu me'elav nachid le'umdina. One second, I just want to figure out how to read that exactly, those words. This is already the rejection. So now they say, Amduhu me'elav nachid le'umdana. The difference is that if Amduhu me'elav, the case we brought before, was a person who actually got evaluated, it's just the evaluation was done without the intent for this particular mitzvah. So Amduhu me'elav, then nachil umdina. That case he had already done an umdina, but damei alai. If you just say damei alai, damei alai. Then in that case, lo nachil umdina. Even though you might say every person is at least 4 zuzim, the person was never evaluated. So that's why in that case. So in the end, we say we don't have any proof for any of these answers, because that's not the same. You can't compare the average person who never had an evaluation, even though we know he's worth something, to someone who actually had an evaluation. So that's not a fair comparison, and therefore that doesn't prove anything. So we're left with all these questions. I just want to point out that there was another opinion that said there was a possibility of, with this 10, the 10 comes from like needing a minyan, and that because it was davarsha b'kedusha, it's like a davarsha b'kedusha and a minyan, that you need, you know, like Kaddish, that you need 10 people, 10 men, so it's like the same thing here, that you, because it's a varsha b'kedusha, because you're sanctifying something to Hekdesh, that's why maybe you need 10 in this case. Okay, and with that for today.